Long before Photoshop, in fact, ever since the early days of photography, people have been doctoring photographs for all sorts of reasons, including art, politics, news, entertainment, commerce, or just plain trickery. And yes, removing wrinkles as well. Faking it, manipulated photography before Photoshop is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's the first major exhibition devoted to manipulated photography before the digital age, and it runs through January 27th. Mia Feinman, assistant curator in the Met's Department of Photography, organized the show, wrote the catalog. The catalog, by the way, is distributed by Yale University Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mia Feinman to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
Should I be surprised that this exhibit has been underwritten by Adobe Systems Incorporated?
No. Well, Photoshop is actually in the title of the exhibition, so it was a natural fit. And, of course, Adobe is interested in the early history of manipulating photographs since they represent the present-day digital darkroom to a large extent.
You say that one of photography's great fictions is that the camera does not lie. How did that saying even come into popular use, considering the fact that, as you document in the show, it's been lying since the 1840s?
Well, the phrase, the camera doesn't lie, actually was in a play by the playwright Boosie Coe that was performed in New York in the 1850s. And the play involved a camera that recorded a crime that had happened, a murder, and the murder itself was registered on the camera plate. And in front of the jury, the defendant said, "Well, the camera cannot lie." And so that was the first time it appeared in print. It may have been in common parlance before that.
When did people start questioning the objectivity of photography?
People were aware of the fact that photographs can be manipulated in the late 19th century, certainly. There was a famous trial of a spirit photographer, William Mumler, in 1869, and that was really the beginning of people becoming very broadly aware of the way that a photographer could do various tricks in the darkroom to alter an image.
Although some pretty intelligent people bought into that sort of thing, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, certainly. He certainly did. I think it's always easier to believe a manipulated photograph when it supports a view that you already hold.
And what were the pictures that Mumler was creating?
Mumler started as a portrait photographer, and he would take portraits of people, but in the background or alongside of them would be these ghostly figures that he claimed were the spirits of their relatives or deceased loved ones. And he distributed these in Boston and New York, where he had studios. In 1869, he was arrested as part of a sting operation launched by the mayor's office, and he was put on trial. And during the course of the trial, they brought in various expert witnesses to describe the ways in which he may have made these photographs.
And how was he making them?
They never actually figured out exactly how he did it, which is why he was acquitted. But he used double exposure. He used printing from two different negatives. He may have had a person stand in the background briefly when he was taking a portrait, and then leave the frame without the person posing for the portrait noticing it. So he probably used various different techniques.
And those were the most common ones, along with retouching, I would assume, to make a picture look different than it would have been if I just took a straight snapshot. I can't do that with my smartphone.
There are various different programs for smartphones that will apply a filter to your pictures, like Instagram or other things that will apply a general filter. But you're right. They don't make it that easy to retouch a portrait to get rid of wrinkles or other complexion flaws.
In the early days of photography, many photographers strove to make photographs look like paintings. Was that one of the reasons so many of them manipulated the images?
Yes. They were trying to make their photographs look more artistic, more harmonious, and also to show that the artist could actually exert control over the photographic medium in the same way that an artist might control the elements of a painting. And so it wasn't only to make their pictures look like paintings, but to show that they could actually control this medium creatively.
And would an objective observer been able to tell whether a photograph had been altered or not?
I think it depends on the observer. But 19th century viewers were appreciative of the ambiguity in photography between reality and artifice and between truth and fiction. So when they looked at a photograph, they may suspect that it had been manipulated in some way, but especially if it was an art photograph, that was part of the enjoyment of looking at an image.
My guest is Mia Feinman, who is the curator who organized a show called Faking It, Manipulated Photography Before Photoshop. It's at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and runs through January 27th. We have a slideshow of images from this exhibit on our show page at WNYC.org if you want to check out what we're discussing. The show features about 200 photos or so from the 1840s to the 1990s. I guess 1990s is when everybody who wanted to manipulate a photograph just switched over to Photoshop. All the airbrushers went out of business.
If they didn't switch over to digital, then they probably went out of business. But yes, the first version of Photoshop was introduced in 1990, and it improved rapidly over the next few years, completely changing the field of retouching.
Now, the 1840s, because that's when photography really became available to people. Well, was that when it was invented?
Photography was officially invented in 1839. And by the mid-1840s, there were photographers taking figures out of their portraits, just really doing substantive manipulation to the camera image.
Teaching Stalinist Russia what to do.
Yes, well, that also became used for explicitly political and ideological ends as early as the 1870s.
So we have people manipulating photographs right from the start. Do we know who the first one to do it was? Who's the first one in your show?
The first one in my show is Calvert Jones. He learned photography directly from its English inventor, Henry Fox Talbot. And that was the image I was mentioning, where he photographed a group of Capuchin friars on the island of Malta, basically as a sort of tourist image. And the finished picture we see shows a group of four men, but the negative also survives. And in that negative, you can see that there was a fifth man right in the center of the composition that he retouched out with India ink, probably just to make the composition more pleasing, to get rid of the sort of crowded forms in the center of the image.
Hasn't there been a debate throughout the history of photography over whether it's a good idea to manipulate images or whether you should remain as pure as possible?
It's been an extremely contentious issue throughout the history of the medium, and that became most prominent in the early 20th century with the emergence of the straight photography aesthetic. It was particularly in California, a group called F64 that involved Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, other great photographic artists who really advocated for a purity of the photographic medium that meant no retouching, printing the full negative, not cropping, and that became really the dominant style of art photography for much of the 20th century.
But you point out that Paul Strand admitted to altering one of his prints.
He certainly did.
And Paul Strand would have been one of those purists.
Yes, he was absolutely a purist. And this picture, it's an overhead view of City Hall Park, when it was first published, was championed as absolutely objective, showing that photography can be truer and more objective than any other medium, and especially when used by a photographer like Strand. What I discovered late in life, what Strand admitted, was that he had actually retouched a figure out of this picture because, again, it was sort of crowding the composition. And he just did it. And there was a real conflict between the rhetoric of straight photography, what people were saying about and what people said they were doing, and the practice.
But this was also important for photographers, especially the socially conscious ones like Lewis Hine, to get across the idea that the pictures they took were really the truth. And he said, photographs don't lie. Liars may photograph. Can one argue that there's no such thing as an unmanipulated photograph? Didn't Edward Stein say instead every photograph is a fake from start to finish?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the early 20th century, especially with the emergence of documentary photography, people needed to believe in the truth of the photographic image. And that's part of why this belief has been so persistent. Even though people know that pictures can and have been manipulated, there's still this need to believe in them anyway, or at least to suspend your disbelief when you're looking at a documentary photograph.
Now, what would someone like Lewis Hine have thought of Man Ray and some of the other photographers who made art out of manipulated photography?
Lewis Hine would have been fine with that. It depends really on how the picture is presented, what the context is, and what kind of claims you're making for it. In fact, Lewis Hine did manipulate images. I have a couple of pictures by him in the show that are composite portraits of child laborers from southern cotton mills. And he created these by merging two different negatives together in a single image, probably to show the underlying physical type of the child laborer and to generalize these individual portraits to a more general type.
Well, photographs have also been used for political purposes. I mentioned Stalin getting purged party members out. They were also used to promote the ideas of eugenics. And it's been used by journalists as well, including Bruno Hauptmann being pictured in the electric chair. And National Geographic faking photographs?
Yes, the National Geographic pyramid scandal was really one of the first scandals of the digital age. What they did was move two pyramids closer together on the cover of the magazine, and this was very controversial for a magazine like National Geographic to be doing because of their stellar reputation for photographic objectivity.
Do you think there are still some photographs we think were the real thing that were probably manipulated?
Almost every news photograph that was published in the 20th century was manipulated in some way, but usually this was just to emphasize certain elements in the picture or to clarify or highlight
details. You mean
details.
Burning in and dodging
burning
out.
And dodging, but also actually painting on the picture with airbrush.
Or setting things up. Robert Capa is accused of setting up one of his most famous photographs.
Right.
And Richard Avedon once told me on the show that if he was photographing an event early in his career and the sun was really making it impossible to get the picture right, he would ask people to move around so that he could get it right. You've broken the show up into a bunch of different categories, each one to suggest the various ways that you can manipulate a photograph.
Well, each section of the show focuses on a particular motivation for manipulating the photographic image. To me, the most important question when you're looking at a manipulated photograph is why. Why did somebody bother to do this? What was driving them? Because it really is a lot of work to alter an image by hand, and it's much easier to just take a picture and print it directly. So there has to be a good reason.
And the last segment section is called Photoshop, and that features a lot of people I think of as painters or certain kinds of photographers. But Eve Klein, for example, John Baldessari is in that group. They trying to do the stuff that later Photoshop made a lot easier to do?
They're doing similar things to what the other photographers in the earlier photographers in the exhibition are doing, but they're doing it in a somewhat more self-conscious way and with more humor and with a greater interest in calling attention to the malleability of the photographic image.
To the falsity of the, to some degree, they're saying to you, this is not a straight photograph. I've done something to it.
That's right.
It's just like when Gregory Crutzen sets up these very complicated sets and photographs them to look like something real, but we know that they're not really real.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So that all has been changed now. Does anybody still do these sorts of things, or is it all, has Photoshop just made us all capable of manipulating photographs of faking it.
Photoshop has certainly made it easier for non-artists and non-professionals to manipulate the camera image. One of the things that was fun to watch for those of us who had some internet access during the storm was to see all of these pictures, fake storm pictures, circulating on Facebook and on email. There's one that I particularly like of a scuba diver swimming in the Times Square subway station that's obviously faked and, you know, was immediately, sort of popped up on the internet and circulated and, you know, everybody said, oh, yeah, that's funny, that's a fake. I mean, it's very easy to do these things very quickly, to respond to current events with a faked image.
Were any of them inspired, any of these photographers inspired by the kind of trickery we saw in films? Going all the way back to the Melies brothers?
Oh, yes, yes. One of the great things that I found was the number of decapitated head pictures. That was a motif that was used by Melies in his films as well as by many other magicians.
Faking It, Manipulated Photography Before Photoshop is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. There's a gorgeous catalog from Yale University Press. My great thanks to Mia Feynman for talking with us about it.